Namaste, as I bow to you. It is me, Professor P, here, and today we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to have a POSCOM Prevention Science interview. Special guest today is Sarah Fine, and she is going to talk about her recovery journey, experience, strength, and hope.
Hi, my name is Sarah. Thank you, Adam, for having me today. I am a current junior at Old Dominion University. I'm working a 12-step recovery program locally. I am 34 awesome years young with a gorgeous 6-year-old little ginger daughter. I have family in the area. I volunteer in my community. I like to give back in the ways that I can and try not to fork up this thing called life.
Amen. I'm about to go into this amen thing. Not like we've done it before, but, you know, amen is period. End of statement, end of sentence.
It's a definitive statement all on its own.
It is. No, awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate you. What y'all don't know, those wherever you are, because we're live in the studio. I'm lying. But wherever you are in the realm, I was late today. And I don't even know what I'm doing with this whole recording thing. I don't know how to do a channel here, a channel there. And so I'm grateful that Sarah is, you know, a willing participant here. So, and we'll get back into recovery, of course, because that's your life and ODU and all those things. But recently, you said your mom had been diagnosed with cancer. Would you be willing to delve deeper into that?
Sure. So as I mentioned, I work a 12-step recovery program, and I feel that we only keep what we have by giving it away. So I would be more than happy to share what we've walked through recently. January 8th of 2024, we discovered the inch-sized tumor on the bottom of my mom's tongue. A week later, after a PET scan and biopsy, she was diagnosed with stage 4 squamous cell oral cancer, which is one of the most aggressive forms of cancer. Actually, it is. It's number one, which is just awesome. She recently, February 28th, was admitted here in Norfolk General for a tongue removal surgery, where they completely cut out the tumor, removed both of her lymph nodes, cut out a portion of her mandible, and replaced it with posterior scapular tissue and her scapula, the bone, like the bone graft, used a bone graft to replace the mandible. She is now a little under a month post-op. Still can't pass the swallow test, which means she's trached. She cannot eat food regularly. She cannot talk regularly. She will undergo speech therapy, and I'm sure because she's a very strong, independent, competent woman, she will excel in all of those areas. But for now, it's a whole life change.
Right.
Within the past 2.5 months, she went from that extremely independent, competent, driven woman at 68, lives alone, did everything by herself, to needing me to advocate for her and speak on her behalf in doctor's appointments, to feeding herself through a syringe and a tube, and from just not being able to communicate with humanity around her. This, unfortunately, could be linked back to a direct result of her using.
Right.
Because addiction is a family disease. That's something I've come to learn over the years in my studies and in the recovery program that I work.
Speaking of recovery and then this situation, like, how do you believe it has changed your perspective? You can get into your recovery journey, but I mean, obviously, if you weren't in recovery, do you think you'd have the capability to be there for her during this time? And
maybe? Absolutely not.
No?
No. At least not in the capacity that my higher power has allowed me to show up for her today. I used to think love was about control, or that I knew what was best for others, especially in a situation that's so black and white. Okay, you're doing this. You need to change your behaviors. Things will get better. everything will be better. I know best. That is baloney. I was able, because of the program that I'm working and actively working steps during this process, to surrender my control to my higher power and to also realize that love is fully allowing someone to be exactly who they are and still showing up in the same capacity unconditionally for that person, regardless of how they will respond to the situation at hand, or if they will do the quote unquote right thing, or if they themselves will ultimately find recovery.
It's very sacrificial, love, right? It's very sacrificial. And then so will they do the right thing, right? So now, thinking of your past, like, I mean, your mom obviously knew your journey. Does your mom know she had problems? I mean, how is that? Like, if you and your mom were to be talking about recovery, is that concept in her? I mean, she's a strong, independent woman.
So it's funny that you asked that. Originally, no, she did not have a problem. She has not had a problem. As an addict myself, I can relate to that mindset, right? Because if I am aware that I have a problem, the next step is that I have to do something about it. And as an overthinker and a conscious human, both of those things, she would have to do something about it or worry. But when she was first diagnosed, she found everything under the sun to blame the cancer on, except for her using. And then she said she needed to make certain lifestyle changes.
This takes me and makes me think about step one with denial, right? Almost in a sense, I mean, and maybe some of us don't, even when we admit it. Maybe we just don't, or are incapable. The disease won't let us, whether it's her generation, right? Her experiences, and that's hard, I guess.
Well, I've been told that as well. I've had other adults tell me, you know, it's just a generational thing. They did this, which is true. Her parents had a nightcap every evening.
Yes.
And then she grew up thinking that was okay and normal. And ironically, as did I, because my entire 34 years up until February 29th, I had never seen a day where my mom did that. She was a very high functioning, she was a respectable member of society, right? Her social acceptability kept her from having to deal with her addiction issues. So yeah, there's a lot of denial. There's a lot of avoidance. There's a lot of misnomenclature. She has lifestyle choices she needs to rein in, right? Not that one day at a time, I need to focus on why my choices are affecting every aspect of my life, including whether I will continue to live another day.
Right. The ones I love. And you brought up Finley. And how is she? What was their relationship? How has their relationship been over Finley's 6-7 years of life? And has this matured her, obviously?
I believe it has matured her. I tried to protect her as much as I could, obviously, from the gravity of what was going on. But as a parent, when things come full circle, I see a lot of the ways that my mom mothered me and the way I mother my daughter. I get to see my mom more free with Finley. They have this loving relationship. She gets to be this grandmother who's not so controlling, who's not so sit still, be quiet, like, you're being too weird, which I heard often. And
what is wrong with you?
I know.
I always heard what is wrong with me.
The jury is still out on that. So,
Adam, what is wrong with you? And I would say, I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
One day at a time, we'll collectively figure that out. However, they had a loving relationship, obviously. My mom played the role of grandmother very well. She loves by buying things, by gift giving, by using money.
Language.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, to show up in that way. Because in my opinion, and I could be wrong, she was incapable of emotionally being there in the way that we needed her to be.
I wish that my love language was surrender. So I could just, like, great. I need help.
Right.
This is how I'm showing that I love you. Take care of me.
Mine is the opposite.
Mine would probably be the gift giving. I know my love language is acts of service and
me
of affirmation.
I think that in recovery, and I'm not trying to, I am trying to make Sarah laugh too. And this is a serious situation. However, those that are in recovery have heard of HALT: hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Mm-hmm. You can also add an S, HALT. And there is, don't take yourself so serious. Be a little bit silly. Because we need that too. And yeah, I just did that to interrupt. And
no, that was great. Because I don't need to take myself so seriously, nor this situation. So my mom, after her surgery, did not want my daughter in the room. She was not allowed to come see her, which also limited my ability to be at the hospital 24/7.
Yeah.
I'm a single mom, so I can't bring her. I can't talk. Well, finally, on the day she was discharged, it just worked out. You know, my mom's in normal clothes at this point. I'm the one taking her home. I said, I've got to go get Finley from school. Aftercare's closing. She's going to come back with me. I brought her in. My mom at this point, with after the post-tongue removal surgery, talks
right.
a little
you
funny.
You said the whole mandible, right? I mean.
Yeah. So she has a little bit of a speech impediment, or just, you know, that I don't know the nicest way to say.
Can we say it? I mean, she doesn't have a tongue right now, right? Pretty much.
No, she has a tongue. Okay. I was so confused about that.
Thank
like
you.
Day three.
And you are an expert. Like what you were saying is like, and you'll tell us what you're doing in life and school, but go ahead. So day three.
One of the doctors came in and it was just my mom and I, and he opened her mouth. The swelling had gone down and I was like, hold on, wait, there is a real tongue in there.
Okay, good.
I was so confused when they kept saying I took 100%, or we had to take 100% of the tongue to get all of the tumor. I was like, wait, so there's nothing. And people kept asking, are they going to do a prosthetic tongue? Are they going to do something like that? But I was thinking, how would they manage a prosthetic tongue? Guess what? The tissue that they used from the scapula, they reconstructed a tongue. That's why it is there, and she sounds funny. And she can't swallow because it is literal tissue.
And it's
just
not the same
in the shape
nerve.
Of a tongue.
Oh,
there's,
goodness.
She can't taste what she does. Like, if she regains, if she passes a swallow test in the future, because right now we're here just for today, then she will not be able to taste. She will not be able to speak. In her mind, she says coherently. But yeah, she doesn't have the same muscles in her tongue, the same taste buds, the same nerve endings, everything like that. It's just basically a placeholder. So she has a little thing to wiggle in there.
So we're going to switch gears, right? And this is a lot. Like, this is a lot for anyone, you know, having that end-of-life process and just all of that. And when I say end-of-life, I mean, like, you know, I mean, this happens, right? Tell me about your... Like, did you always know that, well, we just said there's something wrong with me, but like the using alcohol, drugs, the recovery process, how's your story? What is that like?
So after a little bit of recovery, I realized it started well before I was ever actively using or making the choice to actively use. I remember I have been on some form of medication for my ADHD since I was 5 years old.
Me too.
I feel, I don't know if I felt much then or felt lots of things that I could not communicate effectively, but I feel it played a huge role in my life. So when I was about 7 or 8, I was home sick one day, again, single mom. My mother was at work and I was a very messy child. I took a certain decongestant medication that might be an active ingredient in other recreational things. And I organized my entire closet. I had a blast. I like redid my room. We weren't allowed to put anything on the walls. Talk about controlling. So in my closet, I had taken the majority of my clothes out. And in there, it was like this creepy dark room that had posters everywhere, and it was my only form of expression was trapped in the closet. Ooh, that's weird. Anyway, so yeah, I realized that's probably when I had a problem, because I came alive, and as soon as the medication wore off, I was no longer alive, but I was aware of it. The high and low.
And I like that came alive statement, because we're going to do this quick pausey. So a lot of times, like with the, well, you know, alcoholism and addiction are different. Cool, awesome, and I'm down. Now, in the all-inclusive 12-step programs, right, one is alcoholism and the other is addiction. However, in the real world, there is where it's like alcoholism, there's different varieties, but the alcoholic or addict like us is we used or found something to make us come alive, right? Or like alcohol or drugs put color into the world. Everybody else seemed to, or everything seemed to fall in place. But then there's some with addiction, it seemed like, well, I just wanted to leave reality. I didn't want to feel anymore. And so it's, there's very different scopes. And so that's why I like to say that I identify with alcoholism and addiction. But because that coming to life is, and let's not get it twisted now, the same addicts, right, that they got clean in that program too. And so thankful for that. But hearing that come alive, that, you know, because there was a spiritual void, I guess.
There was. And also, you know, nature versus nurture type of deal. I was always different, right? I was always weird. I always needed to stop doing something that I was just inherently doing by existing. So in a way, not only come alive, but I feel less inhibited now. I feel this takes away all that worry and anxiety and all of these little voices inside that are telling me I'm not good enough. And I can just be myself. I don't have to get kicked out of educational institutions because I wanted to be the class clown or I wanted to act out. And I found acceptance in those weird veins that deterred my life and my future because I felt love there. I felt like, hey, someone finally sees me.
When did you first start experimenting with, I mean, the tech, you know, drugs or alcohol?
13. Probably 12, but 13 really, like I can remember I was smoking in the boys' room.
Did you inhale the first time?
I did not.
I'm gonna share a story with you.
I did, actually.
Did you?
Yeah. So then my brother came back and told me, my brother's 5 years older and we went to a K through 12 school, right? He came back and told me way later in life, they made you smoke oregano and you said you got high. And I was like, what? No, they didn't. Maybe, I don't know. Like, I don't know what they did. I don't know what happened, but I think I did. I think I inhaled, if we're looking back. I don't know. It didn't matter later. Like, I kind of wanted to say jokes on them, did much harder drugs, and destroyed my life for a longer period of time. So I wish that I would have been as innocent to not know I was smoking oregano.
I was smoking cigarettes, and then I guess it got word to my mom. And so one night, she, like, threw a pack at me. She's like, hey, I heard you're smoking cigarettes. I was like, yep, pull one out and smoke. She's like, you're not even inhaling. And then I learned how to inhale. Also, I can remember being 8 years old. And I was like, that whole year, I was like, I don't know why I'm ad-libbing now. I'm ad-libbing from her script. Okay. And I was like, is Santa real?
At eight?
Yeah, I was like, is Santa real? I need to know. You're going to quit asking. So it was like December 28th. The gifts had come. Life was good at this time. And I don't know. I guess I beat her pretty bad at Connect Four. And then she was like, Santa's not real. I know. I was butthurt.
My brother did that to me.
And see that odor? Yes. Yeah. So your brother, now tell me, is your brother still? And now I got this picture that he's like rogue. He's out there.
So today I don't have to victimize myself. Because my behaviors, I'm sure, were not great, nor right. should be glorified at the time. But we don't have the greatest relationship. He is also, I shouldn't include astrology here, but he and my mother are both Tauruses. They enjoy their own, like, stubborn, bullheaded company. They don't need anyone else to survive. And here I am, like this Jacob in the multicolored or technicolored dream coat. It just annoying the poop out of them constantly. And so, yeah, if that paints a picture, we didn't have the best relationship.
Is he present with, like, in this area with what's going on with your mom?
He lives 3.5 hours away. He did come down for the surgery. And at that time, he stepped right back into that role of pretending to be my father.
Right, right.
And I wasn't doing anything well enough.
And although I had been here since the beginning and was doing the day today, having to go home and take care of my daughter was an issue. It made me less than.
And I think here, and it's not interrupting your story, right? But it's showing us, at least with you and I, how family, it's a family disease, and how, you know, those little moments, those interactions and those roles really at least build who we become as we start to emerge into adulthood, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, did you find that you were starting to use every day or most of the time, middle school, high school, I guess now?
For sure.
So we have, I mean, you can get oregano right up the street.
There was a bit of open market on oregano, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't have to find a sketchy connect. No, but I definitely was. So I was prescribed medication for, you know, my neurodivergence at the time. I did not take it. I would slip it down my sleeve and then realized I was an addict when I took the entire prescription with a friend before school one day and stayed up for 3 days. I wrote a mini play. It was on a stack of Post-its. The world will never know its greatness. But yeah, I started to escape reality. Weird things happened in my childhood is a way to put it. I mean, we all kind of have like some sexual assault, molestation.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
especially just women. Yeah. And guys too. Guys too. But no, I mean, probably women, three women, and then don't come forward. And
right. And it was weird. And I never told, you know, my parents or anything like that. Or I never told my mom or any of my other primary caregivers. Also, the medication I was on now as an adult, researching the effects on children, made children they became hypersexualized.
Yeah.
Also, you would have weird feelings and not know why. And these are developmental periods. So I started at 5 years old. And according to Maria Montessori, you have not decided how the world will treat you fully until you're 6 years old. So in this pivotal time from 3 to 6, how I'm going to react to the world, how the world is going to treat me in response to that. I believe that being sexually molested
there's a trust thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's Erikson's psychosocial between 3 and 6 is trust, right? You're starting to get, definitely. So, but you did find recovery young.
We didn't become friends, but I found it. I was made to find it, actually. When I was 19, I ran into some legal trouble. I was basically like the main character of Blow. No, not really. Again, jokes on them. I was moving that oregano like hotcakes, and I was forced to go into the ASAP program. And I had to go to recovery-centered meetings and a community service board check-in weekly. I was using, and my friends and I were faking the signatures on the meeting slips. Like, I remember going to a meeting in Franklin and just kind of think this is so weird. But I think that was the only meeting I actively went to, and one at OC Hospital. So I had been in the rooms at 19, and then, you know, the method of using that I was used to within my family that was socially acceptable, I no longer liked. I started blacking out, treating others like doo-doo. I was saying things I would not if I were sober. So then I found my true love, because I could control how I behaved, and I felt a part of it. I didn't feel weird anymore. Everything was, you know, under wraps, although it was not. I wound up in my first treatment facility at 23. I made it like 90 days. No, not even 68 days. I had plans to go see a certain artist in DC with someone I used with previously. Was told not to go. It'd probably be a bad idea. Went anyway and relapsed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then went on a form of MAT when I had my daughter. I pieced together 5 years then, because life was chaotic. I couldn't complete school. There was zero balance. I had oh my gosh. I could make you believe in the beauty of your dreams, like Eleanor Roosevelt. And we would start with kismet level fire. And then I just disappear like 2 hours later into the 5-hour scheme of things, because the follow through for me, I could not. the pressure I would end up using, I would falter along the way. So after having my daughter, her father and I separated like a month before our wedding. And I had all of these great internalized feelings. I was repeating the cycle. I was going to ruin her. I had already ruined myself. I had this chip on my shoulder that he still kept relapsing and I was not. I also then at that time thought it was a great idea to come off of my MAT because I'm stronger than this. And my experience in the rooms prior kind of gave me a negative opinion.
Sure, well.
Of my, you know, clean time.
You're not clean. Exactly. Now, I'm going to eat these French fries and cheeseburger with ketchup. But
5 cups of coffee, 8 cigarettes later.
And I'll rationalize. And I rationalize too. Yeah. So you did this. You went off of the MAT.
Mm-hmm.
And
horrific experience.
Yes.
Would not recommend it any time of the year.
Yeah.
It is a 0 out of 10. But yes, I came off of the MAT meds. And I did have my daughter's father. He took her for, I think, like 2 weeks. He kept her. He knew what I was doing. He was supportive. And yeah, it was insane. It was intense. 60 days later, I believe, I imbibed again for the first time in quite some time. And all of that, hey, I'm better than this. I can white knuckle this. Proved I could not.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, in no time at all, 3 or 4 months, I was using heavy drugs again.
Right.
And really, I referred to them to someone the other day as baby drugs because they weren't as hard as the other drugs or like the ways and means of getting them into my, There are no such thing as grown-up and baby drugs. They're all drugs.
I agree.
Okay, cool.
Agree.
So that inclusive methodology is the way I have to look at it now. I will die. I told someone the other day, there are only 2 options for what I've been walking through in life. I'm either going to stay clean and work my program, or I will overdose and die.
And so this amends process, which living the amends, right? Not necessarily the whole write a list and then, you know, with your sponsor and then step 9 with your sponsor, whatever. What I'm saying is there is this living the amends process, at least for me, as soon as I stop using and recover. And you're seeing this now, being there for your mom, right? Being present. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your, because you're in college and you have, I mean, you have goals, you have plans here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of plans, but right? Mm-hmm.
I do. Man, I am told a lot by my sponsor and others who care about me that I might need to slow down, but I feel I've wasted so much time. And I am, not to toot my own horn, but like I am very bright and capable and intelligent, and I've just been wasting my potential. So I finally went back to a local community college in the area, completed my associates in social science and humanities, applied to Old Dominion University. I was accepted. I am now a junior. I'm in my second semester as a junior. I am an honors student. I am in Psychari. I am trying to obtain my bachelor's in science and psychology. I also hope to, one day at a time. I'm not going to put myself down. I promise. August 2nd, I'll take the MCAT and I will apply to medical school.
Clean date, August 2nd, right here.
Is it really?
0802 2018.
I'm totally going to pass the MCAT. Kidding. I'm not going to get all weird.
I think that's Chuck Chamberlain's birthday too. Chuck C. Jimmy K. actually died on my mom's birthday in 1985, July 9th. I'm a big numbers guy. January 8th, right? With your mom. So I think numbers are important for us too. It keeps us, and that's why we keep clean time.
Right. Well, listen to this. For an addict, August 2nd is the test date. September 4th is the date you get results. That's my daughter's father's birthday.
So, and look, I say numbers are important, right? Because I knew how many milligrams.
Oh, to maintain the perfect.
Right. Mm-hmm. I knew all the amount doses. And so numbers are, and I think that that's part of that obsessive quality too. So in a perfect Sarah world, what do you see? You know, I mean, look, obviously recovery will come first, but what is it? What is it that you would like? Peace and content and all those things, but like career wise, maybe too.
World peace. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not. But
it would be beautiful. I know, but I had to do the Miss America answer. No, I would love World Peace, honestly.
Me too.
That was my first career being was a Montessori teacher. And Maria Montessori thought we could have world peace by building peaceful, self-sustaining individuals. Anyway, I ultimately, career-wise, would like to be a psychiatrist who specializes in substance abuse counseling, but with a different approach. Same, but different. Whole family counseling, like group counseling. Yeah,
with the WH, whole, not HOLE.
Yes.
I got a hole in my heart.
I've got a hole in my bucket. Dear Lila.
WHOLE hole. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd also like to integrate other CBT methods, like using art therapy, music therapy, talk therapy, play therapy for children. These things have helped me, I realize. I could spend the entirety of another podcast going into how music has changed my life or helped me through my recovery. Also, even in bouts of psychosis, it made decisions for me. That's neither here nor there. So in a perfect world, I would like to be a driven career woman who can help others navigate this recovery journey and also show my daughter, who is the child of two addicts as well, that if she ever needs it, hopefully she doesn't because she is a meeting maker. But if she ever needs the room,
and that's what I wanted to also bring up, especially because, you know, I got a little 2.5-year-old. And then his brother is he's coming. His brother's coming. And I can remember he was born and then they let me speak right there in the hospital. So he's been an online Zoomer meeting maker.
Ooh.
What does she tell me about this? She goes to meetings and...
She does. So I want to just to circle back really quickly. I just want to show her that women can do whatever they want to do. And there is zero limit. As much effort as you put in is how much you will receive in return. And the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dream. She, oh my goodness, she is the life of the meeting. She comes. At first, it was hard. I, like many other young single moms in the rooms, judged myself. My child wouldn't sit still. Go figure. She was in a car seat in her first meeting. But
a child.
Right.
Exactly.
And she did not know how to stop being weird. So she was 4 and running around and didn't want to sit still for an hour. But now she listens through her headphone to like her little shows on tablet, on the iPad and everything. But she has picked up recovery. We got over the meeting of the Serenity Prayer. We left a meeting the other day. And she was like, hey, guys, don't do drugs. Like, it was really funny. She says, 18 months, like every time the Duct Tape Gray tag comes up.
And then, Mike, we love you.
Right. Yeah. Little shout out. She also then will say things like, how many years do I have, mommy? Because at first she said, hey, mommy, what's an addict? Because she heard I'm an addict. You know, when I would say, hi, my name's Sarah and I'm an addict. She'd say, what's an addict? And I'm like, well, it's not that. That's not a word. But I struggled at first with my own self and self-worth to explain to my daughter what it was. But the best thing I could do for her was to tell her what it was. And it was someone who, at first, it was someone who wanted to, like, you know, watch a little bit more Netflix or Disney than they should. And then they realized they were watching Disney Plus all the time and they couldn't stop. Or it was time to come in from playing in the backyard, but they didn't want to. And then they just kept playing so much. They were so tired that they fell down and scraped their knee. And now they're bleeding all over the place. And they still kept playing.
Yes.
So it was...
Sounds like my son. I think that in serious, like, you know, you got self-acceptance, triangle of self...
Self-obsession.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then those IPs... It's almost that as children, we kind of are, right? I mean, hey, give me the Cheetos, right? I'm ready to roll. But we grow up at some point.
Do we?
Well, I mean, I'm 5, but like I'm growing up. I'm not 3. I'm not 3. But like most people that are addicts, I guess they realize there's billions of people out there. And that. So I know what you're saying, though. And it's a great description. I think that I will utilize it.
Right. And it's as simple as that. So in other forms of higher power, there in
certain writings and texts, it says to seek after your higher power with the enthusiasm of a child, with that childlike spirit, just to keep knocking on the door until someone answers. And I also feel like you could relate that back to being an addict, because we don't know when to stop. We don't have self-control. We require someone to put us to bed, like to tell us everything's going to be okay, because we can't self-regulate our emotions, at least in active addiction. And I think we're really hard on ourselves, but we don't realize it's a brain injury. This is now we've created a deficiency in our brains emotionally. We're now not, we don't have correct or proper emotional responses. The age when you started using consistently is now your maturity level. And when you are clean and serene, you're starting over at a 13-year-old mindset and growing from there.
I think too, and I know we're gonna shut it down, and I bet that you'll come back here in the future. I've already kind of planned some things out where you'll come back, and there's this other person. I'll let him introduce himself too.
He's got a very deep voice.
He would come back too, and then it would be really cool. I think enthusiasm is the God within.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to like Google it or something, I think it's like enthusiasm, like, you know how they have the Latin version or whatever, that deep, what the meaning is, like God within, the enthusiasm, the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I like that too. Lastly, I know that you have step work scheduled to do, and I got to get you out of here. Was that funny?
That was hysterical. Thank you. I was right.
But is there, you know, is there anything else that you would share, especially to a parent? And, you know, whether you have you're a single mom with a child, or then now you also have your mom, right? And so I
feel like those roles have reversed
right
now, because I'm caring for her much more than I feel she's caring for me, even though I still really desire and want for her to care for me.
But do you believe, though, at the end of the day, like, recovery still has to come first?
Oh, for sure. Ironically, it was my mom who said, don't you think you should click on to so many meetings? You're taking time away from your child. I mean, you're doing all of this other stuff, and that's great, but maybe slow it down on the meetings. And I became so offended and got so defensive. I said, I would have literally nothing if I slowed it down on the meetings.
Yeah.
I maybe shouldn't. I'm capping the girls, the women that I sponsored, because my sponsor
and
told
service
me to.
And making
service. Okay, too. I'm capping the service
and
too.
And service too.
Yes. We're stopping. We're not taking any away, because a commitment is a commitment. I'm still a control freak and stubborn, if you can't tell. But no, for like young mothers and young women, even in recovery or outside of recovery, your recovery has to come first. Your self-care would have to come first if you're outside of recovery. Because I cannot pour from an empty cup. As silly as that sounds, if there is nothing left, there is nothing left. And I have come to this point, full disclosure, in all of this, that my eyes were just leaking every day. It was this weird occurrence. I didn't know where it was coming from. And they were just leaking constantly, all of these feelings and emotions. And I realized it was because I'm strong. I'm working my program. I'm doing all of this. I'm doing all of that. It's going to be okay. It was not okay. I was not just sitting with my feelings in my recovery or sharing honestly and openly in a meeting, because I was afraid I wasn't sharing the hope, right? But the hope is that I'm going through all of this and I'm still clean. And I don't know, in those moments, I wanted to figure out what was wrong with me. Like, I'm trying to dissect every single part of me. And I thought, you can't do that. I just needed to come clean and say, hey, I'm sad. I'm hurting. I need help here. Also, I can't be so proud of myself. My daughter is 6. I am a mother in recovery with all of these other things. Chill. Sit down. Get watered. Take a spiritual breath and try to recenter and wake up and do it all again tomorrow. But we don't do that today. It's just for today. But I will just continue one day at a time to do the next right thing.
I'm going to hit you with the amen. And again, Sarah, thank you. My in-laws family, their maiden name is Pipes. And so Grams would have leaky pipes. So when you were leaking, I was like, you know, leaky pipes, and we have to do maintenance on ourselves. I think that it's, and especially in your career choice and trying to, you know, go a different route with that psych, in a sense. Well, I mean, it's being done. I think it's awesome, and you're going to be back here, hopefully, just for today if we don't use. All right. Next week, it's Dr. Tansy Vandekar-Burden.
That's a name.
Yeah, she is the director of the Social Science Research Center, and I love Tansy. Like, man, Tansy actually was the first for my class in the doctoral program, right? Like the first official class. It was an internship in January 2022. And now this is technically what we're doing here is my last class before dissertation. She's going to be, you know, so she was a nice little sandwich there. And you were before the doctor.
Okay, then pre-doctor to the doctor.
So, all right. And words like love, thank you. And, I want to say thank you for staying, but now I'm going to go.